Hi, everyone. Welcome to Connecting Women in Insurance with me, your host, Julie. This podcast is about celebrating extraordinary women throughout the insurance industry. If you missed the first episode, please go back and give it a watch or a listen wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to Connecting Women in Insurance with Julie on your favorite podcasting platform. Please feel free to share with your family and friends as we are just launching this brand new podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review as it will help us grow on the platform. Hi, everyone. Here with me today, I have Ms. Joelle Ward, the Executive Director of NACA. So, Joelle, tell me about your position and what you do here and what NACA is.
So NACA is the National Association of Catastrophe Adjusters. I'm the executive director, so basically I handle the operations end of NACA. I work with a board of directors. They have direct oversight over NACA and our operations, but I kind of handle I handle the day-to-day.
Ah, so is this all you do, or?
It is now, yes, yes. I joined NACA in April of last year. Mm-hmm. NACA has been my customer for seven years, I believe. Since 2009, I was working for a company called Conference Direct, where I helped them source hotels for their conferences, conventions, meetings, and NACA has been a client since 2017. So I got to know NACA pretty well, the people, the exhibitors, the attendees, the board, and we started talking, and they said, you know, maybe this might be a good fit. And so after a year of nagging me about it, I said yes. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you ever see yourself involved with the insurance industry when you were starting out?
Not with the insurance industry, with the association industry. I spent 17 years working for what we call small staff associations with usually five or fewer people. So I come to the insurance industry kind of through the side door,
right,
as an association professional helping NACA run the operations from an association standpoint versus the adjuster or insurance viewpoint.
Right. But you're very well known in the insurance industry because you bring so many people,
correct,
throughout the insurance industry together.
Yes.
What are some of the things you really like now that you've kind of been in and seen the insurance industry a little bit? What are some of the things you like about it that you would maybe encourage someone to get involved in if they decided to take a career turn into it?
Into the
insurance industry.
What I think I liked, when I worked for Conference Direct, I had many clients. And I think what I picked up on early on with NACA is how genuine this industry is, the people in this industry, how there's no BS about them. They just tell it like it is. These
Absolutely.
People care so much about what they do. And that passion, I think, extended to, you know, my passion in making it happen for them. Usually the convention, because I was working the convention just up from the conference planning side up until last year. And I think what drew me mostly to them really was the people and how close-knit they are. This is a very tight-knit community. And also how willing they are to share their knowledge with everybody else, that especially new adjusters that come in. And it was really a great experience when I first came to my first one. It was interesting because one of the things I said to the former executive director at the time was, wow, there's a lot of men here and very few women. So one of the things that I did a couple years ago is I added a question to the registration form just to see how, because I, over the years, I started seeing more women coming mm-hmm. to the conventions. And so we're starting to see an uptick in females in the industry. And that's kind of nice too, because again, I want to empower and promote women as much as I can.
Right. So tell me, I know, because you and I have talked before, that this this job and putting this conference together at this level is very tasking. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's just it takes a lot of work and time. How do you balance home and work?
I'm a workaholic, so I have a hard time actually balancing that. I do work probably more. I mean, my sister called me a workhorse, and she just says, you just don't stop. I mean, it's in my nature. It's who I am. I thrive on it. Mm-hmm. I actually have a very understanding husband who really, he recognized that early on in me that my work is very important to me.
Right.
I set my goals, my internal goals, and I strive to meet those goals. And so I do actually struggle, probably like many women do, struggle with balancing that and stepping away from work. I think because I work from home, it's mm-hmm. actually not as difficult as maybe it is for women who have to go commute back and forth between office and home. So I do take time out from my day. I sometimes do not have a regular, you know, 8-to-5 schedule. I take time, you know, sometimes at noon. I do take time at noon to go away from my office. I get up and walk away from my desk. I have a 100-pound dog that I have to walk on a regular basis. I put my headphones in, and I take calls sometimes to it, but that helps me, you know, balance a little bit and take me away to recalibrate my brain.
Yeah. What type of dog?
He's a mix of everything, but mostly he's German Shepherd and Chow. I had him DNA tested.
Ah.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's an interesting mix.
Yes.
I've not ever seen that before.
Yeah, he's a handful.
Yeah.
But he's got a lot of energy. But he keeps me on my toes. And like I said, I think going on those daily walks, because I get phone calls from board members and from people, adjusters, exhibitors, that call me all the time. I'm like, hey, I'm walking my dog right now. And so I think they're getting used to that, because I still talk and, you know, I work and walk at the same time. So
right.
Yeah. I multitask.
But that's good that you do that.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question that I'll ask everyone. Did you ever, any time in your career, did you ever make a mistake where you really thought you messed up so bad that you might get fired, or it was going to put you in a whole different position that you weren't going to like, but in the end it turned out you learned something from it and it taught you for moving forward?
Yes. I mean, there was a time, and, you know, I thought about this question, and, again, it does put me in a really bad light, I guess, in a way. But when you're at an event, and this happened like 15 years ago, and I was, well, maybe even 20, you know, I was sitting at a bar at a convention with one of my colleagues, and we just started having a conversation with a gentleman, and he asked us a question about somebody within the industry, and this was when I was working for an association, and we didn't have really nice things to say about that individual, and it came back that individual was meeting with that person the next day, and it got back to my boss, it got back to me, and I was mortified. I was just mortified at that. And so I called him directly, and I said, you know, I profoundly profusely apologized. And what I discovered that day is, you know, you can, you know, gossip. We, you know, people gossip all the time and everything. You just got to be careful what you say. You know, it taught me a valuable lesson, and one that I'm still hoping that I never, ever, ever do again. It was a lesson that I learned. You just don't do it.
Yes. And you know, that has happened to all of us. And one thing, growing up, my mom would tell me, if you're not willing to say it, we've heard it, if you're not willing to say it to their face, don't say it behind their back. Yeah. Because it does. I mean, because everybody does it. Everybody has done it.
Yeah.
I've done it. When I was younger.
Yeah.
And man, when it catches you, your stomach sinks.
Oh.
You feel horrible, because in truth, for the most part, if you really step back and look at that person and understand their position, you probably wouldn't say that, or you probably don't even think that, really. Right. You know, so that is a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah.
But apparently you learned well from it.
And it, well, and then the reason why I bring it up now, because it is a very embarrassing thing to bring up, is because we, you know, we've all been in situations like that. But I do believe that it did, you know, I got through it. I took the steps to make amends, both to the individual and the that I spoke poorly about, and to my boss, and to the individual I actually had a conversation with at the bar, and I said, I'm sorry for doing that. So I learned that lesson, and I remember that moment. I remember what I had in front of me for a drink, and I wish I could have blamed alcohol, but that was not the case because I didn't drink a whole lot. But it does, the moments like that stick in your brain forever.
They're defining moments.
So I bring it up because, again, it is a moment I am so not proud of, but I don't, you know, and again, I think about that and I bring that up when I'm in a situation. If somebody says, oh, what about so-and-so? You know, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going there.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and again, because I got burned, I burned myself and I took ownership of that. And I think that's something that I learned maybe from that moment. You have to take ownership, but also when you're, again, if you, like your grandmother said, you know, I think it helped me also to be more open and share my thoughts with people. And I calibrate my thoughts a little bit more before I open my mouth. However, it brought me to, it helped me speak more openly with people and share my opinions, not be too afraid to share my opinions, but do it in a way that is a little bit more professional and not as harsh.
Right.
So I think I learned quite a few things from that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's seared in my brain to this day. And I hope I don't do it again. I mean, I hope.
You probably won't after that experience. Yeah. Okay, so my next question for you. Who was or is your most influential person in your life, either personally or professionally or both, and why?
I think I've got it. I have two people that come to mind, one professional and one personal. My personal, of course, is going to be my sister. And she is the person I might go to. I can tell her anything. Here's what happened to me today, Corrine. How would you handle that? She's 3 years younger than I am. We're close. And we're great friends, but I value her input and her opinions because she brings a different perspective, and I bring all kinds of things to her, personal and professional.
Right.
Professionally, I have a colleague of mine that I've known since 2009, Laura Lee, and she's been my go-to if I've ever had problems with a hotel, with negotiating a contract for a client. She's my go-to. I go to her for everything. Even to this day, I still do. I tell her about the situation. So I look at her as my kind of like a mentor. We're the same exact age. I think we're 1 month apart, but she's been invaluable to me. I just know that I'm going to get some good feedback from her.
Yeah.
So it's very important to that I stay connected with her on a regular basis.
Oh, it's super important to have people like that in your life.
Yeah.
It means a lot. So I don't remember if I mentioned this or not, but we are in Little Rock, Arkansas on location. So I have my notes on written down so I don't forget them. So what advice would you give to women listening who want to move forward in their career? And it doesn't matter what career it is, but like if they're kind of stuck wherever they are, what advice would you give them if they're feeling frustrated and wanting to move forward? Or you know that feeling. You know what I'm talking about. It's that something just feels like you got to move, but you don't know which way.
The thing I learned early on, and I've always done this, is never wait for the opportunity to come to you. Seek out the opportunity. I started out my career in association management as a secretary. I was an executive secretary.
Nice.
After 17 years, I made it to as high as senior director of member services, which was the number two position at my last association. And I don't think I've ever been offered a raise or a promotion. I actively asked for it. Never wait to, you know, go set your goals and go after it and step up and, you know, don't be afraid maybe to be a little bit more vocal. Again, if you do it respectfully, even if it's with people that you're disagreeing with, you've got to show that you know your stuff. On a lighter note, which again may not sound important, but a firm handshake. And that is something I thought about that I wanted to bring up. I shake hands with people all the time. We all do. And I can't tell you how many females whose hands I've shaken. It's like a limp dish rag.
Oh, yeah, no.
And a firm handshake to me just sends a signal. I'm serious. I'm a go-getter. And I'm serious about whoever I'm speaking with. But at that, having that, practicing that handshake, especially if you're timid or on the quieter side, that having that and practicing that and being able to do that will elevate your self-worth, will make you feel a little bit more self-important. And that's important, I think.
It's huge. And you always look them in the eye when you do it.
Always.
You never look at your hands. I learned that. I mean, I've never done
always.
That. I realized I always look people in the eye when I shake their hand. But when my daughter was taking acting and modeling lessons and all, that's one thing they said. When you go in for an interview or whatever, don't look at your hands to make sure they connect. They're going to naturally connect. Look them in the eye.
Yeah, look them in the eye.
Look them in
Lean
the eye.
Forward. Mm-hmm. Shake that hand. Again, not hard. Because I've shaken men's hands before, and they've practically broken my hand before. And I just want to give them that advice. You got to tone it down a little bit, guy, because you just broke my hand. But on the flip side, women will sometimes just, hey, like that. And that, to me, just, again, I get an image of the individual, and usually it's not the nicest image.
Right.
And it kind of, to me, it devalues you a little bit in the eyes of the person whose hands you're shaking.
Right.
So it's
a confidence thing.
It is a huge confidence thing. And you're right, looking them in the eye, I always look people in the eyes when I speak.
So going back to the you were never offered, because I would like for you to maybe give an example of how you went in and asked for, or advice on how to ask for a raise or a promotion when, because that's kind of a hard thing. You know, some people are like, well, I know I've got what it takes and I can do it, but how do I say it where I'm not coming off aggressive or rude, or what do I start with? Do I go in?
Well, so with my first job, when I was the executive assistant, I think after about 6 to 8 months, I had a good boss. He was, he was good. And I said, Stan, I'd like to schedule an appointment with you. I wanted to talk to you about something. And so I immediately made it a request for a meeting. I didn't want to be distracted. I wanted his full attention.
Right.
So we set up our calendars, and I went in and I kind of said to him, I said, you know, I seem to be doing a little bit more than what your standard secretary does. And again, I was, did I say executive secretary?
Yes.
I said, I seem to be doing a little bit more. And I just think that my title and position is better reflected if, and I came in with the idea of what I wanted to be. And it was, I believe, I asked for a coordinator. So the company was IRP Inc. And so I was executive secretary. And I said, my positions, I seem to be doing more than just what a standard secretary does. And I think the position of coordinator would maybe probably better reflect what I do.
Right.
And I said, I gave him the idea and we talked about it. And he actually said, yes, we changed my title. I actually got an increase. I didn't ask for the increase at the time. It just kind of came with it because I presented him with that option right then and there. I gave him some bullet points about why I thought I would be able to do that. And I did that, I think, a couple of times because I went from I took maybe three or four different positions to get to that senior director position at that time before I left the association world to go to Conference Direct. And it just worked every single time. I didn't wait.
Absolutely.
Another thing I have always done is when I've had a new boss, I've said throughout our year, you know, instead of getting, you know, getting before we get to our my annual review, if I'm doing something wrong or incorrect that I, or something that I just need to improve on, can you do me a favor and tell it to me immediately at the time? Because one of the last things I want to do is be surprised during my annual review.
Absolutely.
And a good boss will do that. Mm-hmm. A bad boss may not.
Right.
And, you know, because I've had bad bosses before too. And you do. You learn from bad bosses just as much as you learn from good bosses. And my first boss, Stan, luckily for me, was really good.
Yeah.
I looked up to him and he was good. And I had him for about 3 or 4 years. So I learned a lot from him.
Right. So that's kind of what Craig has taught me. Come to me with the problem, yeah, but bring your solutions.
Yeah.
They may not be the right solutions, and we'll discuss them. You know, we may have to adjust, but that's basically what you did. Here's the problem. I'm doing more than. Mm-hmm. This doesn't really reflect what I do, and here's the solution I see.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Okay. Do you have any funny stories throughout the years?
Oh, my Lord, I do. Funny stories. Oh, gosh, yeah. Okay, here's a funny story. And again, this isn't insurance related. It's conference related. But
that's
with my association, I plan the conferences and the meetings. And we had a board meeting in Toronto. And so in Toronto, they have, in Canada, especially the northeastern part of Canada, they have a lot of undergrounds and to get from from buildings to buildings.
Really?
Yeah, they do, because it gets so cold in the wintertime. So we were going to go from this hotel to a restaurant over here in this building.
Right.
And I said to, so there was a group of about 10 of them, 10 board members who wanted to go there a little bit early. And I was staying behind to wait for a couple of stragglers. So I said, hey, I know that you can get to this by going into downstairs into the underground and getting over there to the restaurant into this building, which is, I would say, two blocks away.
Right.
And so they took off down into the underground, and I waited for the 3 or 4 people that were straggling. And so I said, well, we'll just walk across, you know, because I said, it's over in that building over there. And as we're walking past, so each building, there are like stairs or escalators that go up and let you come out into the street. We're walking past, and all of a sudden, I see these 10 people in this glass enclosure with a door that's locked, and they're like, we don't know how to get out of here. And I didn't know what to do. And to this day, I just die laughing. It was probably the funniest thing. And then also, because again, I have a pretty strong personality, and people just tend to, you know, I say, okay, here's what we're going to do. And they're like, okay. And I was walking a group of people. We were walking to another restaurant across a big road in Charlotte that had like 6 lanes.
Right.
And I said, okay, light's green, let's go. And I started walking ahead, and I turned around and I saw that everybody was kind of walking single file. And I thought they looked like little baby ducklings. And I turned around halfway around. I went, wah, 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 wah. And everybody just started laughing.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was just funny. Again, you know, not everybody's a leader. Not everybody, you know, some people are just happy doing things quietly. I just tend to, I speak my mind. And again, I just kind of just step up to the plate.
Right.
That's just my personality. Mm-hmm. And
I love that. Quack, quack.
I still laugh to this day. So I'm like, wah, wah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to ask you some, you don't know these questions.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to ask you a few quick questions.
Okay.
So just answer me as fast as you can or whatever.
Sure.
Okay, so what is your favorite hobby or pastime?
Traveling. History and traveling.
Really?
I'm actually half Belgian.
Okay.
My mother's from Belgium. I was born, I'm a military brat. My dad was an Air Force American. And so I was born in Brussels. I grew up mostly overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And so historical visits, I mean, that's all we did. So that is a huge passion. I still have a home there, and I go home about once or twice a year. And I have a passion for castle. Go to England. I mean, you can't spit without hitting a castle. So it's my go-to place all the time.
Where's somewhere you haven't been that you really want to go?
Japan. Japan is top of my list. Well, and Egypt. I don't know if you've ever seen the old Peter Ustinov movie, Death on the Nile. It's an Agatha Christie movie from 1978 or 79. I want to do a cruise on the River Nile. I mean, but Japan has just, ever since I've seen that movie Lost in Translation, I'm like, I want to go to Japan. And I have a good friend of mine who's been to Japan several times, and she's just told me so many wonderful things about it. And I was fortunate, one of my clients, their event had a lot of people from Asia, mostly from Japan, and I got to meet some wonderful people, and I'm just dying. People. I'm dying to go to Japan. And my husband wants to go too. He doesn't want to go to Egypt. He's like, I'm not interested in that, but I want to go to Japan.
Nice.
Definitely.
Okay. What is the best compliment you've ever received?
You've changed my life.
Nice.
And that was just actually this week.
Nice.
Wow. Literally you changed my life. It was a new adjuster who has been, she's single mother, child with a 10-year-old boy. And we had several conversations about her career. I find that I get a lot of calls from new adjusters mm-hmm. who are just starting out, and they just don't have the direction yet, you know?
Right.
And so sometimes I feel like a therapist on the phone, and I helped her figure out how to get here. I gave her advice on how to get started and how to, you know, really kind of recognize that being a new adjuster, you're your own business.
Yes.
And I started out at Conference Direct in the same boat, but just in a different industry. And she just said to me, we met, and she's like, you just changed my life. You just gave me the direction I needed. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful to you for that. And that just blew me away. It really did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. If you could have any superpower, but it had to be kind of useless, what would it be?
I have one. It's a totally useless superpower. I cannot get lost. I have the inability to get lost. If I get in the car, I will get turned around and turned, you know, but I will always end up exactly where I'm supposed to be.
That is
hilarious that you asked me that question, because I tell people that I have the most useless ability that I can never monetize, that I can never make money on, but seriously, I can never get lost.
That's awesome. Okay. What is your biggest pet peeve?
Post-pandemic, I'm finding a lot with the people that the vendors, people that I work with. And again, I work with people at hotels all the time. I'm seeing a real big disconnect right now in the younger generation. Mm-hmm. And I have to adapt to them just as much as I believe they need to adapt to us as well,
right.
The older generation. And I'm seeing some troubling things, and I find that I'm becoming more and more impatient. I'm not on TikTok. I'm barely on Twitter, or I'm sorry, X. And texting, I'm hit or miss. So I find that my pet peeve is that I'm too impatient these days with people who, you know, don't want to connect one-on-one on the phone. That's just been a pet peeve of mine, and I have to deal with it. I have to, you know, I have to adapt myself to it, you know, and it's a struggle.
It can be.
Yeah.
Okay. If given a chance, what job would you want to try? Any job in the world?
Any job in the world. Oh my gosh. Oh, I would love to be a food taster, a food editor or something, you know, going to restaurants and trying out different food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I could go for that.
I would love that.
That would be awesome. All right. What job would you never want to do?
Retail. Customer-oriented retail. What these people have to put up with, especially for some, you know, aggravated customers, I couldn't do it. I can't do it.
Mm-mm. Okay. What's your favorite TV show?
Seinfeld, The Office. Absolutely fabulous.
Murphy's loving that.
Oh. So my husband and I are both Seinfeld freaks, and so is my ex-husband. And my ex-husband and I used to call each other sometimes and just leave quotes, Seinfeld quotes. So yesterday we were in the back office over here, and I had to go get something out of my wallet, and I'm leaning down, and I'm opening my purse. I'm like, my wallet's gone. My wallet's gone. You know, that's from George's dad lost his wallet at the doctor's office. So, yeah.
Okay, well, we're on the last question. What direction do you think the next leg of your journey will take you on?
So when I accepted the position at NACA, I jokingly told Doug Hubby, who's the current president of NACA, I said, I'm going to give you 7 years because then I'm retiring, but I'm going to give you the best damn 7 years NACA's ever seen. And honestly, that is my ultimate goal. I'm hopefully going to leave NACA in a much better place than when I came. Not that it's in a bad place now.
Right.
I think NACA is phenomenal. This year we're celebrating NACA's 50th convention. Next year we're actually going to be celebrating NACA's 50th year as an association.
Nice.
It's been great. It's had its peaks and valleys, but I think we're on a high right now, and mm-hmm. I want to continue that high. I want to bring all the knowledge, 17 years worth of association knowledge to NACA to make it better. I want to leave it in a good spot.
What will you do then?
Travel. Yay. I'll be traveling my goal is to have a home here in the U.S. because I'm a U.S. citizen, but to go back and forth between my home in the U.S. and my home in Belgium, because Belgium is my touchstone. That's where I go. I have friends there mm-hmm. from high school. I went to high school there. I am half Belgian. It's part of my culture. It's part of who I am.
Yeah.
And the food is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
I mean, I grew up on bread and butter. Oh, my gosh.
Well,
the best.
In the South, I did too.
Okay.
Yeah. So, one more thing.
Sure.
Is there a question you wish I would have asked you that I didn't, or anything else you'd like to say?
Oh my gosh!
To
women out there listening, I mean, I have so much to say. I did, you know, I gave quite a bit of feedback and everything. I just don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to ask to for what you want. And this is a quote, I watch a lot of movies and I love movies. But here's, you know, one of the quotes from the Joy Luck Club is know your self-worth, know your value. And if you have to write them down, just write them down,
mm-hmm.
but know your worth and bring that with everything that you do. I think it's important.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Joelle, thank you so much for taking time out of your very, very busy week.
Yeah.
To meet with me and to give such great advice to the women out there listening.
Yeah, I truly appreciate this. Thank you so much, Julie. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, that wraps up episode 2 with Miss Joelle Ward, who was a wonderful guest. If you enjoyed today's content, please feel free to like, subscribe, or leave me a comment. I will see you next time.